Well, good evening, everybody. I'm going to talk about the expanded envelope exercises, which I think are clearly the best way to help keep our friends alive. Now, the first endorsement the expanded envelope exercises got was from AOPA. I had the opportunity to fly E3, as I call it, with Richard McSpadden, the executive director of the Air Safety Institute, and he was so impressed that they adapted parts of E3 for their focused flight review. So what makes E3 such a powerful solution? First of all, it's data-based. I examined in excruciating detail nearly 700 NTSB reports and found some interesting things. One is the phenomenon I call cognitive unavailability, which means that the pilot has all the information he needs to fly the plane safely, but for whatever reason is not processing that. A second major discovery is low-speed spirals, and we'll see this on the next slide. And basically, that's a botched base to final turn that looks just like an incipient spin and can cost you as much altitude as a spin. And then, sort of as a fun teaser, one of the phenomena that I've observed is there is a perceived need in many base to final turns for the pilot to tighten up the turn. E3 has a 5-minute exercise to address that problem, and that was actually published just this morning in airfaxjournal.com. So here's what's interesting in terms of low-speed spiral. This data set was 551 RV series NTSB reports, 151 fatalities, 38 loss of control, 24 that were classified as stall spin. So if you look at the red and the yellow and the purple, if you went back into the NTSB report and looked at them in excruciating detail, 7 of those were not spins. They were actually low-speed spirals, very clearly. 4 of them were very clearly stall spins. 13 you couldn't tell. Now, this does not mean that low-speed spirals are twice as common as stall spins. What it means is they are of comparable magnitude, and if you only look at high angle of attack, you're going to be missing a number of events. So you need to look at both if you're going to cover the ground. So it wasn't enough for me to just say, hey, I like this. I had a bunch of people, the toughest critics I could get to fly this, including 3 very senior ex-military test pilots. One of them has the impressive credential that he used to command the Navy Test Pilot School. And then at the other end of the spectrum, I flew E3 with one of my friends before he did the first flight of his Kitfox, and he was a relatively low time pilot. So we've covered the bases there. But one of the criteria is how applicable is your solution to all of GA? Well, GA includes biz jets. When I explained E3 to the editor of BCA Digest, which is an online biz jet publication, I was invited to write a viewpoints column. One of the readers wrote, and I love this quote, that E3 was, quote, both practical and revolutionary at the same time. But there's more. E3, because it does not focus on technique or hardware, was well received by a battalion of Army helicopter pilots. I gave that presentation a week ago. So what makes E3 the best of the best? We look at all kinds of loss of control, not just stall spin, not just high angle of attack. It's low cost, there's no hardware. And it transfers to other planes. You don't become hardware dependent or technique dependent on one plane. It fits your own style of flying. You don't have to change how you do this or how you do that. Whatever style of flying you do now, it will work with. It's been tested in, at this point, over a dozen kinds of planes. The top end was a Beech Baron, if you can believe it, and has been blessed by test pilots to GA pilots. Questions?
So, Ed, why don't you go over the curriculum a little bit with us with the couple minutes that you have here and describe some of the maneuvers that are part of this.
Okay. The poster child, the really fun one that everybody likes, is what I call the 60-90s. And at traffic pattern speed with flaps up, so you have a little bit of airframe cushion, you start off with full aileron deflection. How many people use full aileron deflection at traffic pattern speeds? There's nothing hard, there's nothing scary, but it's different. And when you do that, you're expanding your envelope. So you then do a 90-degree turn at a 60-degree bank, and then full aileron deflection the other way, and you're not concerned with airspeed, you're not concerned with altitude. What you want to do is you want to get the sensations and the feeling so that if you encounter that situation in flight, you're not overwhelmed. So it's a right, left, and they are a lot of fun. When pilots see this for the first time and they are not happy with their performance, they always say, can we do it again? So that's the poster child.
You say on your poster child that you don't care about airspeed. What about maneuvering speed?
All of these are well below maneuvering speed. The low-speed spirals, which are a demonstration, typically are recovered about 15 knots below maneuvering speed in the RV9. So almost all of E3 is well below maneuvering speed, fat safety margins, normal category airplanes, 60-degree bank, 30-degree pitch, 2Gs, no spins, and hopefully not even close to a spin.
And what are you trying to develop? Are you developing muscle memory? Are you developing just a recognition or an awareness for the pilot when they've gone through, you know, these exercises? I mean, what's the long term? I go up and do it with you today. What am I going to do 3 months from now, 3 years from now with this?
The point of this is that most pilots only learn to be good in the middle 5 or 10% of the flight envelope, depending upon who you talk to. And so if they get outside of this envelope, outside of their comfort zone, that's where loss of control can be more prevalent. So the idea is that once you get outside of your comfort zone, your previous comfort zone, if you get there, it's sort of a, oh, gee, I didn't really want to be here, as opposed to a panic-inducing situation, which could lead to inappropriate control response. So we're looking at sensations. We're looking, if you will, at confidence building. We're looking at making pilots more confident, more capable. But we're not teaching technique. Technique is not part of E3 at all. There's lots of people teaching all kinds of techniques. Don't want to go there. Don't want to fight those battles.
Have you got a manual of maneuvers, and how many are there in your current?
Currently, there are about 100 exercises, and I use the word exercise to differentiate from maneuver. A maneuver typically will have criteria for speeds, tolerances, how much altitude, what angle, and such. But if the idea is to get the sight picture and the feeling and the sensations, you don't want to be distracted by instruments. You want to see what's going on around you. And then when time comes to learn a particular maneuver to specifications, then you can start worrying about the instruments.
So a little bit about what Greg was talking about. Like, whenever I'm flying with somebody and I'm trying to teach them, I'm looking for a result, right? And so if I look at just what you talk about, the 60-90 exercises, what is it that you're trying to actually, what's the goal of that exercise?
The goal of the 60-90 exercise is so that people, when they get in that situation, are comfortable. We've expanded their personal flight envelope, and this is not flight envelope in the sense of G and airspeed. This is flight envelope in a much bigger sense. Control deflection, control feel, sight picture, sensations.
I guess I was a little concerned. One of the goals of this whole process is to try and reach as many airplanes or pilots as possible within the experimental community. Just what did you have in mind in the way of enticing or merchandising or marketing, getting people to do this? Not questioning the benefit of it, but just how are we really going to implement this?
That's an excellent question, and there are several answers. In fact, that's probably worth an hour's answer. But some of the key ingredients are, it has to be fun. People aren't going to go off and do some exercises just because they read that it will make them safe. It has to be fun, and the fun will also make the lessons learned be better absorbed. Then the other point, which is a macro point, which is not unique to E3, but to all of the presentations tonight, is that whatever solutions come up need to be marketed by the entire industry, from government to Alphabet groups, to universities, to flight schools, to individuals. The whole spectrum has to market this to get any acceptance. Otherwise, we're going to have these really cute little pockets of safety ideas here and there that aren't going to catch on and aren't going to get the job done.
So I'd like to follow up on that. When I think about this, I look at the PTS or the ACS, and there are maneuvers that are built in there that are specifically to teach out bad habits. And so do you see this as important enough to move into those government standards? Do you think there are a couple of maneuvers that would do that? And what scrutiny do you think you would have to go through to maybe do that process? Or is it a different path?
To a large degree, they're independent. The PTS and the ACS and all that is learning to fly the middle of the envelope precisely. And E3 is trying to expand beyond that, expand people's personal envelope. But there are some interesting exceptions. One of the exercises is the deliberate runway overshoot. Because a lot of accidents, when I look at the data, there is an implication that the reason that the pilot screwed up the turn base to final is that they knew if they went through the runway centerline, bad things were going to happen. I've flown with one student pilot who thought that if you flew through the runway centerline, the plane would spin. So the solution, the E3 solution is, okay, let's fly base. There's the runway centerline. We won't turn final until we've crossed the runway center line. We're at an altitude higher than turns around a point, so the risk is minimal. And then we turn and we say, hey, we got plenty of time to align. Now, this is not to say that's the best technique operationally, but as a learning experience, you get to see the sensations. You get to see, hey, this isn't a big deal. So if that happens in the real world, you say, gee, I wish I hadn't done this, as opposed to, oh my gosh, I can't do it.